Okay, now we're going to talk to a talented young researcher who's just back from the States. His name is Dr. James McDermott. He is just back from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where he was working at the Artificial Intelligence Laboratory there. Welcome to the show, James.
Thanks very much. Hello, John.
You're probably a bit jet-lagged. I think you just got in yesterday, did you?
I just arrived at UCD yesterday, but we've been in the country for a bit longer, so
okay.
I'm not jet-lagged anymore.
Right, so you're living a very exciting life anyway, jetting between Dublin and Boston and MIT. It is in Boston, isn't it?
That's right. It's in Cambridge, just outside Boston.
Okay. Now, maybe tell us a little bit about your different areas or your own background. You were working, I know, in the Castle Institute. Tell us about that. That's the Center for Applied... what's the full name of it again? Remind me.
It's Complex and Adaptive Systems Lab.
Sorry, Complex and Adaptive Systems. Now, that's based at UCD.
Yeah, it's here in Clonskee, just off the Belfield campus in UCD.
Okay. People mightn't be aware of Castle, but what's its main reason to exist, if you like?
I think the main reason is to bring together researchers in different disciplines, because we have a lot of people from different disciplines here, from computer science, physics, social sciences, and security. There's an emphasis on computer science in particular,
mm-hmm.
And bringing people together, and the aim is to bring about more collaboration between the different disciplines. The best research is always interdisciplinary and it's always collaborative.
Sure, and most, I think just from looking at the website anyway and some of the people, it's a lot of maths and physics and maybe the harder sciences is what you're primarily interested in there.
That's right. My own research is in computer science.
Yeah.
And in particular, it's in evolutionary computation.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a type of computer science which is, we say, inspired by nature. So instead of trying to solve problems directly using the computers, we try to set up a simulation in which good solutions to problems can evolve. So evolution in the sense of Darwinian evolution, biological evolution.
Okay, yeah, that's fascinating. Is that a relatively new area, this evolutionary computation, or has it been around a long time?
Yeah, I suppose its roots go back to about the 30s, but really it was directly developed much more so in the 60s and 70s, and it's been exploding in the past 15 or 20 years. It's much bigger than it ever was before. Partly it depends on the much faster computers that we have now.
Mm-hmm. But it's something that always struck me. I don't know, it might sound out of date, but that, you know, that computers are limited in the sense that they seem to learn in a linear fashion, not like a child where, you say, a 1 or 2 year old child is just taking in so much information and they're learning from experience. So is that the kind of thing that you're trying to build in?
I have to admit, we're not at the level of that yet.
Yeah.
I mean, a two-year-old child is the greatest learning machine ever invented. I mean, it's really incredible what they do. People who work in machine learning, evolutionary computation, and even artificial intelligence, I mean, we do see that as a goal in the long term. I think that artificial intelligence will one day create minds which are not similar to humans, but which are as powerful as humans. But at
right.
the moment, computers are certainly very limited in that they solve the types of problems you ask them to solve in a very, yeah, as you say, a linear and a very constrained kind of way.
Yeah, so give it, I know I'm putting you on the spot maybe, but things that computers right now, today as we're talking, that they're good at now and that they're not good at.
Okay, so that's actually a great question because it's one of the classic things in artificial intelligence. What are the things computers can't do? And people always write down things like, oh, they can't play chess, for example.
Mm.
And then 10 years ago, or maybe it's 15 years ago now, we saw that computers actually beat the world champion in chess.
Yeah, I remember he was crying afterwards, wasn't he? He was so upset.
It was a really big deal. I mean,
Gary Kasparov.
Kasparov, yeah. So there are things like composing music, which people say, surely that takes, you know, human intuition, human intelligence, human insight. But we are now seeing computer programs which are creating music which is beginning to approach human complexity. I mean, there are even cases where people have been fooled to thinking that a piece of music which was created by a computer, they thought it was created by a human. I mean, that's the proof is in the pudding, if you like. If people are fooled, then there must be, the computer must be doing something right.
Well, I can hear people saying now there's a big difference between, say, electronic music pounding and Mozart. I mean, what level are the computers capable of at the moment.
Yeah, well, they, believe it or not, they're capable of doing some, even some classical stuff. It's not just it's not just electronic stuff.
Okay.
So this isn't my own research now, but there's a researcher in California who has created a program called Emily.
Mm.
That's his name for her, because he thinks of it as a composer. Mm. And it worked by kind of processing the outputs of previous composers, and it did good imitations of them. But then it worked by feeding back the things that it had created in previous iterations into its own inputs, and then creating new music from that. So in a sense, it was developing its own style by learning from other composers and then building on its own style.
Well, that's fascinating, because that's getting more towards what the humans do, isn't it?
Well, that's definitely what people do when we are involved in creative processes. We learn by imitating other people. I mean, when I was a teenager and I was learning to play guitar, I started by playing other people's songs.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Eventually, I started to write my own songs.
Hmm. Yeah, and we don't just learn, we don't just create something out of a vacuum. We have ideas, but a lot of the stuff is recycled, or we've learned it from others and we're just applying it in different ways, maybe.
Yeah, that's right. That's the creative insight then. So there has to be that spark of novelty.
Okay. Now tell me, I know people are always interested in artificial intelligence, so maybe just briefly, what is it, for those that don't know? They might have heard artificial intelligence. What is that?
Right. It's really the science fiction idea that someday we'll have computers which have minds of their own. And so not just in the constrained kind of way that computers solve problems currently, but they'll be true minds, not necessarily similar to humans, but at least as powerful as humans.
Mm-hmm.
It's artificial intelligence, so it's intelligence like a human, or at least at the human level, but created artificially, so running as software on a computer.
Right.
So it's a very science fiction idea, but there are people working to make it real.
Is it possible, this is something I've thought about with this, like watching the films or reading the books or whatever, do you think that you could have a machine that actually has intelligence that becomes aware of its own existence, like a human, suddenly says, wow, I exist? Or is that completely impossible?
Oh, it's such a deep question. Okay, so consciousness. I mean,
yeah.
There. Okay, so I mean, I read a lot about this as well. It's not an area of my own research. I mean, how do we exactly tell what, you know, how other people think? You know, how do we define what consciousness is?
Yeah.
You know, that's so hard to define that it becomes hard to define it for the computer as well.
We haven't a clue what it is. Yeah.
Right. It's such a confusing question. In so many different ways, and people are attacking it from many different angles. You know, there are neuroscientists, as well as philosophers, as well as, you know, computer scientists. My own opinion is that it will happen, and I think it'll happen in the next century, but I don't think it's going to happen in the next 10 years.
Mm, that's fascinating. Okay, now tell me about MIT. What was that experience like?
It was really fantastic. I mean, it is a great university. I saw that it was ranked at number 2 in the world in a recent ranking, and you know, they're very strong on all, particularly on technical subjects. I got a chance to go there. I couldn't turn that down. It was a wonderful experience. The computer science and artificial intelligence lab there,
mm-hmm,
is where I was working, and I mean, there's so much great research going on there. The kind of research which sounds pretty, you know, kind of science fiction, or kind of sounds, you know, impractical right now, but then in 10 years' time, you'll see it running on your iPhone.
Give us one area, say, maybe, that you think, wow, that's really fascinating that you saw there.
Well, we already mentioned artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the leading thinkers on artificial intelligence are there.
Are based there, yeah.
Yeah, people like Marvin Minsky, Patrick Winston, Jerry Sussman.
Big names. I've heard of them, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a great robotics group there, people working on, you know, humanoid robotics, so how to make robots that kind of interact with humans better. People might have seen videos, and if you haven't, you can see it on YouTube. There's an amazing video of a four-legged robot which the U.S. Army is now using to transport supplies and, you know, equipment.
That's on YouTube.
Yeah.
If you put in four-legged robot, you get it.
I think you'll find it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's presumably creepy to look at, but it's very effective.
Now, we could talk for ages, but I just have to kind of wrap it up pretty quickly now. Sorry, but presumably the robotic side and the artificial intelligence side will come together, because if you can have an intelligent robot that classically helps you around the house, fantastic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's something we all want, right? So a robot that does the dishes, a robot that cleans the house.
Absolutely.
That would be a good start. In Japan, they do a lot of research on this because they have a very quickly aging population there, and they fund a lot of research to make robots which will be useful as, you know, helpers for elderly people.
And is that, I'd say that could be on the cards sooner than the artificial intelligence thing we were talking about.
If we can kind of constrain the task, then you know, it doesn't require full on consciousness and intelligence, then absolutely,
it's in the
near future. So like vision processing is getting better all the time. There's also videos on YouTube which people can see about the driverless car.
Yeah,
that's in the near future, and if we can solve that problem, we can definitely solve, you know, like household tasks.
Sure. Well, James, we just run out of time, but it's great talking to you. And now you're back in Dublin, I might ring you again about some subject and we can chat again.
I'd be delighted. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much. That's Bye. Dr. James McDermott. He's a researcher now based in UCD at the Castle Institute, CASL, and he's just back from MIT in the USA.